Dan Wakefield is a best-selling novelist and screenwriter whose new memoir begins like this. One balmy spring morning in Hollywood, a month or so before my 48th birthday, I woke up screaming. It was the beginning of a year in which I would have scored in the upper percentile of these popular magazine tests that list the greatest stresses of life. I left the house I owned, the city I was living in, the work I was doing, the woman I had lived with for 7 years, ran out of money, and discovered I had endangered my health. Wakefield's doctors recommended giving up alcohol and taking up exercise. He followed their advice. This personal crisis then led him to return to his former home, Boston, and to return to the church. As a young man, Wakefield had become an agnostic, but the religion he sought and found as an adult was different from the encounters that earlier had led him away from the church. Dan Wakefield's new memoir is titled Returning, A Spiritual Journey. His novels include Going All the Way and Starting Over, which was adapted into a hit film which starred Jill Clayburgh and Burt Reynolds. He created the short-lived TV series James at 15 and is a former contributing editor of The Atlantic magazine. Dan Wakefield, welcome to Fresh Air. Let me take a guess here. I would guess that when you started to write this book, one of the first things you had to contend with was how making this real crisis in your life come off as real as you felt it and not sound like a midlife crisis in a made-for-TV movie or something. It's the most horrifying thing when you're going through the biggest crisis of your life and you say to myself, my God, if I tell someone like this, will it sound as real as I feel it, or will it sound like a cliche?
I was very lucky because the way that I originally wrote it was not thinking I'm writing a book or not thinking I'm writing this for a big audience. I wrote it for 8 people in a class on spiritual autobiography in the church I was going to. And that really was fabulous because I felt no constraints. I felt no need to either be apologetic or to hide anything. I just wrote, and it was such a wonderful feeling. And that's the piece I then sent to the New York Times Magazine, and they put it in word for word. I didn't even know they would take such a thing. And in fact, I was kind of asking for advice. Where could I publish a thing like this? And the next thing I knew, they were doing it.
Yeah, the idea of a spiritual autobiography was new to me from reading your book. Mm. Explain what the concept is.
Well, the concept is, I would, for instance, take probably the classic spiritual autobiography, well, at least after St. Augustine, would be Thomas Merton, The Seven-Story Mountain. I taught a course in spiritual autobiography that I kind of made up last year, in which I used Merton and Paul Cowan's book on Returning to Judaism and Peter Matheson's book on Zen, his Zen journals. So it's, in my terms, a spiritual autobiography is anybody looking at their life through a spiritual lens or through that prism of experience.
And that's exactly what you've done in your memoir. So there's big parts of your life that are missing.
Right.
But all the things that pertain to the leaving and the coming to.
Yeah, and also there's a lot of my life that people usually don't think of as spiritual. And I mean, I talk frankly about a lot of things that in fact have upset some people reading and say, oh, well, what are you talking about, sex? That has anything to do with spirituality. And I'm trying to see experience through a spiritual lens.
So, in that quote that I read from your book at the beginning, we got some idea of some of the big kind of calamitous things that happened to you the year that you decided to leave Los Angeles. But how was your career going, too, and what kind of stresses was being in Hollywood giving to you?
Oh, it was huge stress. In fact, when I went to that doctor out there, and I just went to an MD, and I said, I have this funny feeling my heart is beating too fast. And he took my pulse and said, well, you're right. Your pulse is 120. Took an EKG, said, well, there's nothing wrong with your heart yet. Tell me, are you in the entertainment business? And I said, why, yes, I write for television. He says, oh, well, that explains it. And then he just wrote out a prescription. He said, so to answer your question, yes, that had a lot to do with it. And I felt terrible about the. I felt I was in this syndrome of a downward spiral from having a series on the air, James at 15, which did last for a whole year, and it was a great kind of thrill for a writer of novels to have a TV series that I liked, and I loved the show and the characters and the people, and then from that to be suddenly nothing was working, nothing was happening. And I was scared. I was frightened.
I think, you know, what seemed to me was your last straw was when, I think it was a plumber came in to fix something, and even he had an idea for a made-for-TV movie. There were just deals being made wherever you turned.
That's right, yeah. The plumber saw the typewriter, and he said, you know, I've always had a great idea for a series about a plumber who goes into people's houses and he's actually finds out where the jewels are and stuff. He said, do you want to do it? And I didn't know whether he meant, like, as a pilot or a real operation, so...
You know, it interested me that the first step you took is that you went to see your medical doctor.
Right.
Because I think whenever any of us are feeling in these incredible crisis-like periods and it manifests itself in some kind of physical symptom, you don't know where to turn first, you know? Yeah. Should you see a psychiatrist or go to a doctor or maybe just take a day off or, you know, get religious again,
I'm
you started
really
with a medical doctor.
I'm really glad I did that because I had never done that in my life. And I think some real deep instinct told me that this...
Take care of that
finally
first.
Do that. And in fact, another deep instinct told me, gee, taking a prescription just isn't quite the answer to this. And so I went back to Boston. My doctor there did all the same tests. And instead of saying take a prescription, said, I want you to go to this stress clinic, do the exercise, lose some weight, and try to get in shape. And that was just shocking to me because I had never done that since Boy Scout camp. And that really, I think that whole physical turnaround led to some kind of spiritual awareness. Without it, I don't think it would have happened.
My guest is Dan Wakefield, and we're discussing the subject of his new book, Returning: A Spiritual Journey, which is a spiritual autobiography. No, it was when you went back to Boston to move there again, to see your old doctor there as well, that you started going back to church again. How did that come up?
It came out of the blue almost. I was feeling a lot better because I got into this exercise program. I lost 20 pounds.
You gave up alcohol.
I gave up drinking, which I didn't think was possible for me to do. So I was clear. I had achieved a state of clarity that I hadn't had for a long, long time. And in that condition, I was in a bar in my neighborhood. I was just having a cup of coffee and hearing the guys talk. And this man said, oh, I think I might like to go to church on Christmas Eve. And it just struck me. It was one of those thoughts that just took hold. And I decided to go to King's Chapel because I knew the minister from the neighborhood and it didn't look threatening and it said it was just going to be Christmas carols. And what I didn't know was that interspersed in the carols, he read a few things and he happened to read that night a passage from a fabulous novel by Evelyn Waugh called Helena about the mother of Constantine. And the passage he read was about the late comers to the church. And I felt singled out personally. And I was very moved by it. And then I went home and was in bed with the flu for 4 days and a high temperature. And I thought, well, if this is what happens from going to church, I got to be careful. And the whole thing, it was difficult going back in the sense that I hadn't done it for 25 years. I had all kind of emotions about it. Also, being in intellectual Boston, I was a little bit afraid to be seen crossing the common on Sunday morning with a suit and tie. And I must say, to my amazement, I found there were other people in the church who I knew, the regular, respectable
closet
people.
Churchgoers.
That's right. So it wasn't so threatening in that sense once I got into the rhythm.
Well, you wrote that you really got to like the idea of church as sanctuary.
Yes. Yeah, I really felt that. And I think that, and also church as sanctuary. And
sanctuary from what?
From the assaults of daily life that I think we all are subject to, you know, whatever's happening, whether the house is falling apart or your business or your bank account or whatever, that here's a place that you're for a little while out of that realm, that you're in a realm where that particular kind of battle is not going to take place. And just where just a space of silence or a space of music and silence and thought or prayer or meditation on something beyond all that conflict.
Now, you had mentioned that it was 25 years since you had been to church. You had been a churchgoer when you were young. Your family was Presbyterian.
Yes.
And then you kind of left church when you went to New York to go to Columbia University.
Right.
What were some of the things about religion, the way you knew it as a child, that turned you off when you became an adult?
Well, what really turned me off when I became an adult was that was in the 1950s when I was at Columbia. And at that time, the popular Protestant religion of the day was kind of embodied by Norman Vincent Peale and positive thinking. And I sort of felt, well, this is like religion made easy and religion sanitized and Americanized for country club goers. And I was in my first discovery of intellectual truth and wonder and really delight, and that was just jarring to me. Seemed very phony. And of course, what I put aside were all the things like, in fact, Thomas Merton, who had gone to Columbia, and I didn't want to know about that. I didn't want to know that there were intellectuals and men of great sensitivity and women of great sensitivity who did have spiritual feelings and thoughts and insights in their lives.
Because you just wanted to make a break.
I just wanted to make a break. I want to say that's all bad. Now I'm searching for truth, which is all in this other area and has nothing to do with that.
Your mother had for a while been in something called the moral rearmament movement?
Oh, yes. Yes, that was another phenomenon of the 50s. I think it still goes on, but it was started in England and it came here, and it was I don't know what you encounter like group, and it to me seemed to fit in with the Norman Vincent Peale stuff, and also was very repressive, very, you know, talking about the evils of sin and sexuality, and so it fit in with that whole thing I was really trying to escape from.
So as an adult, when you returned to the church, did you feel right away that you were able to find a way of expressing your spiritual beliefs and of being in a church community without going back to the kind of repressiveness that you
sure.
were just mentioning?
Yeah, I didn't feel that kind of thing at all. And I feel so lucky that I happened to walk into this particular church. And, you know, I later, it's really funny, we've had retreats at this Benedictine monastery near Boston called Glastonbury Abbey. And one of the brothers there after our last retreat said, you know, Dan, you're so lucky to be in King's Chapel. It's such a nice group of people. We always enjoy having them out. And it suddenly came, I said, yeah, I never thought of it this way, but I feel like the line from Casablanca, you know, of all the gin joints in all the world, and I walked into this one.
And it was, that's funny.
But it was a stroke of good fortune.
You know, it strikes me that some listeners might be thinking, well, when are they going to get to the part where he tells everybody that they should join his religion? You know what I mean? Because
right.
it's become, I think, in a way, very difficult to talk about religion without people assuming. And then either they kind of pass
right.
the hat, so to speak,
right.
for money, or and then they try to convince me to join up.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I think it's become a real problem.
It has. I mean, it makes you, it's, you know, it's among the many things that have given religion a bad name. And I'm not a recruiter, and I'm not trying to sell a program to anybody else. But just to describe my spirituality is not, it feels very much in tune with friends of mine of other faiths. I felt very much in tune with Matheson's book on Zen and with Paul Cowan's book on Judaism. My friend Sarah Davidson, who's a wonderful writer in Los Angeles, has really, by going to Israel 5 or 6 years ago, and where she went to just go camping on Mount Sinai and ended up having a real spiritual insight and rejuvenation, and has carried that into her life. And so many friends of different faiths are on this kind of path, which I find fascinating and delightful, that it's not restrictive.
Well, it is fascinating in a way that so many people are returning to a faith of one sort or another, and frequently
right.
to the faith that they were born into,
right.
as opposed to, say, in the late 60s when a lot of people were returning to somebody else's faith.
Like,
to faiths from other parts of the country or to brand new religions. So a lot of people are still doing that as well, but I think more so than before, there are people who are kind of rethinking the faith
yes,
that they were born into.
Exactly.
Do you have any big sociological reasons to suggest why this is happening?
Well, it's interesting. I've been writing a piece recently on the theologian Harvey Cox. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I got to writing the piece, he gives a course at Harvard called Jesus and the Moral Life, which has become the most popular course at Harvard. And it last year had 1,000 students in it. And I was asking him about this. Well, why now? And he, of course, wrote a book called Turning East about the phenomenon of the 60s that you were just talking about. He said, I think for one thing that students found out and young people found out that Zen isn't easy, and that which we always thought, you know, you could just get cracked over the head once with a bamboo stick and it would all be done for you. But finding out that, suddenly seeing, well, also, how does that apply if we're really Americans? You know, how does that apply to the lives we lead now? So people have felt more comfortable and more interested looking in their own roots as to how it can work in their own decisions today.
I think in a way, too, that maybe some people have found in their own religions things similar to what interested them in other religions.
Right, you know, that, exactly. That, and because they're not now getting the little Sunday school version of it, which smoothed everything over and said, oh, it's all just tiptoeing through the spiritual tulips.
Well, I want to talk with you more about things you discuss in your spiritual autobiography. My guest is Dan Wakefield, and he's written a memoir titled Returning, A Spiritual Journey. He's also the author of a few best-selling novels, including Starting Over, which was made into the hit film that starred Burt Reynolds and Jill Clayburgh. And we'll talk more after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Writer Dan Wakefield is my guest, author of the new memoir, Returning, A Spiritual Journey. You know, in your early years, in going through your memoir and looking at how religion affected your life, the two really kind of like very personal issues that seem to be very connected with it are one, acne problems that you suffered, and the other, sexual confidence. And I thought that it was interesting that religion or the lack of it or the guilt and fear caused by it would coincide with those two parts of your life. Can I ask you something about acne?
Sure.
To me, this is like the classic kind of thing where you'd really start thinking about Job, you know? Like,
right, exactly.
Why am I
he
stuck with this?
Boils,
what is the meaning of this?
Yeah. And I think for an adolescent at that time, that very tender time, and to be struck with this, and you feel like this is yourself, this is the way the world sees you, this is not something wrong with your leg, your face, that's who you are, it's your identity.
Especially if you're really a reader, which you were,
right.
If you're a young intellectual and you really are very caught up in your mind.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, no, I found it, and it always got me that people always joke about it, maybe because they're so nervous about it, but that it was, you know, very painful. And I thought, well, you know, why is this happening to me? What is this, what terrible thing has caused this? And what, yeah, it was a real crisis. It really was.
Was it a crisis of faith even when you were young?
It was. I mean, it didn't make me not believe, but it made me question everything. It made me question all kind of parts of my life. And it made me, and I read Job. I knew what that was all about. And I thought, well, what does that mean? You know, why are these things happening?
Did you come up with any good interpretation of Job?
Not as good as Carl Jung, and he didn't do very well either. So.
Yeah. Another thing was the church and kind of sexual issues. Mm. Did the church scare you at all about sex?
At that point, this is like high school and the 1940s, everything scared me about sex. And as I look back, I think I was right to be scared. I mean, you know, I mean, our sexual class in high school was a class called Health and Safety. And sex took one day in which they passed around pictures of people in advanced stages of syphilis. That was the sexual education. I then went to in Columbia, this great center of intellectual enlightenment in the 1950s, had a similar class in which the teacher warned us not to read the New York Times Sunday magazine because of the lingerie ads. I mean, this is wild. This is so, yeah, I mean, I think I was right to be scared about the way this culture treated sex at that time was really bizarre.
Did the way the church treated sex have anything to do with your leaving for so long?
I guess I associated that, but I don't think that's when really, at least it wasn't a one-to-one kind of thing. I just associated it with the general thing, you know, the general atmosphere or attitudes about it, about guilt and immorality of that particular kind or the way it was being taught.
And about the same time that you stopped going to church, you also started seeing a psychiatrist, a Freudian psychiatrist. And you had a terrible experience with that doctor. He basically wanted to take control of your life. He told you not to marry the woman you wanted to marry until he was through with the therapy and you really understood
who
you were.
But he was not doing anything different than was the creed or is of those, I think, a lot fewer practice, but really strict Freudian psychoanalysis, which, and again, I want to make clear, I'm not talking about psychotherapy or things that I was later helped by and many people were. But that this kind of process where you lay on a couch and the doctor sat behind you and all he said was, yes, go on, so it was just kind of free association, was really dangerous. And I think I was very lucky to get out of it alive and sane.
Do you think you were substituting one authority figure for another in a way?
Maybe so, because I think, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, well, people become religious because they want to give up responsibility. But I gave up responsibility when I went into analysis. I really said, oh, this is going to take it. This is the answer to everything. Therefore, I don't have to worry about anything. I'll wait till that great moment when I'm cured and I'm whole and I'm this perfect person, and then I'll deal with all those things. And I think a lot of people may, of course, you can use anything like that as an escape or of responsibility, but I certainly used analysis that way.
When you started writing novels, how did the issues that you faced coming of age figure into the novels? It seems to me like going all the way, for instance, your first novel has some autobiographical stuff in it.
Oh, yeah, I definitely used that, and I felt that, you know, at Columbia, I had a wonderful professor, in fact, why I went to Columbia, named Mark Van Doren, who was a poet, and I remember him saying, you know, whenever you write what is really true for you, the thing that's most embarrassing and most painful, then it's going to be true for a whole lot of other people. And that's what I've always found as a writer. And that was true in the novels. It was true. It's true, I think, with this material also. And it's sometimes hard to really believe that. But whenever you do, you get the response.
Dan Wakefield is my guest, and we're discussing the subject of his new book, Returning, A Spiritual Journey. I want to quote something you said, and this dates back to when you were in college in New York at Columbia, and you wrote, I suddenly feared that if I didn't take some kind of immediate and drastic action, I might become one of those gray, listless people to whom nothing interesting ever happened. And I thought, how many of us go through that, of thinking that you have to ensure somehow that you're going to lead an interesting life. Yeah. What did an interesting life mean to you at that
time?
Well,
I had real specific things in mind, and that particular thing was that what led me to go to Israel, which was a great experience. And I wanted, at the time that I was having those thoughts, I was working on a weekly newspaper in the small town, and I thought, oh boy, this is not what I want to do. And I had idols like John Reed and Arthur Kessler and journalists who went all over the world, and Hemingway was an idol, and I thought part of my experience as a writer is to experience these things and to, in fact, from Hemingway, I thought part of my experience was to experience what death was like, see people. I thought I have to be in a war. I wanted to be shot at so I would know what that felt like. And I fulfilled that dream. I don't know if it made me a better writer, but at any rate, it added to my experience. But I must say, I look back, I'm really pleased that I did all those things. I mean, I did have a lot of great experiences, and I'm sure that also, I think it has nothing to do with being a good writer. Carson McCullers sat in her living room and wrote The Heart is a Lonely Hunter, which probably tells us more about life than anything 98% of anybody else has written. So,
now that you're older, what do you want from an interesting life? What does that expression mean to you now?
What I think I most value now is clarity. And I think that for so much of my life, I was numbing myself with alcohol and sometimes with drugs. And I think, by the way, I don't think people mostly or extensively use drugs and alcohol for kicks, but just to blot things out. And now that in about the last 7 years, I'm not doing that, and then I'm finding all these incredible kinds of experience, and just like in a way in writing this book, to go back and in a way re-experience things with that sense of clarity, and it's just been fabulous, and that's been very exciting.
I just have to ask you, in reference to the alcohol that you used to drink so much of, you used to drink cheap jug wine.
Well, I wasn't rich.
Well, I thought you could afford something just a little bit tastier.
Well, I also had, I did. What can I say? I just wanted something that was going to, it was like, I was using it like fuel, you know. I might as well have gallons of gasoline, you know, why waste anything good?
Now that you're, you're exercising, you're really fit, you're probably healthier than you've ever been,
yes.
Right? And you've returned to the church, and that's really rejuvenated you in a lot of ways. Do you want to write different kinds of books? I mean, do you see your fiction heading in a different direction now?
I don't want to write different kind of books. I think that I feel a kind of clarity that I hope translates into the writing that I do. And it's real interesting because I have been for a long time wanting to write a novel about New York in the 50s and when I was there and young people like myself going from the Midwest to New York. And I still want to write that. And I think that maybe the reason I postponed it all this time is that I feel like I can do it in a fuller way now. And one thing interesting is because originally when I thought about it, I wasn't thinking anything about religion or spirituality, but the epigraph I always wanted to use was from the arch over Washington Square, which is a quote from George Washington that says, "Let us raise a standard to which the wise and the honest can repair. The event is in the hands of God." So now I'll sort of see that in a fuller way, I think.
Oh, you know, just one last thing before we run out of time. You kind of return to religion on your own terms.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And is that what made it possible to do that? You know, you're an adult. You're choosing which church you're going to go to. You're looking for things that are going to suit
needs. I don't think altogether on my own terms. And I want to say also that it's always not easy either. Mm-hmm. And the reason I use the term returning is because I think it's a constant process. It's not something, I certainly wasn't born again. I didn't have a zap of lightning out of the sky. And it takes discipline and constant, a lot of things you don't want to do and that aren't easy to do and that you wouldn't choose maybe to do. So that's part of that, part of the process. And it's challenging all the time too, which also makes it interesting.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
My guest has been writer Dan Wakefield, and we've been discussing his new spiritual autobiography, which is titled Returning, A Spiritual Journey. It's just been published by Doubleday. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.